Everybody, boy, nice to see a nice full house for our first fisheries meeting this year. Welcome, this is the House Special Committee on Fisheries, and it will come to order at 10:02 on Tuesday, January 23rd. Members present are Representative, we'll start over here, Representative Eastman, Representative Tarr, Representative Newman, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Chenault, and myself, Chair Stutes. We have a quorum, and I would like to ask you all to please silence your cell phones. We are allowing the use of electronic devices, however, during this committee meeting. We're asking that staff and members of the audience not approach the table. If you need to pass a note to committee members, please get the attention of my committee aide, Matt Greening, and he will take care of it. I'd like to thank Brian Glynn, the Fisheries Committee Secretary, and Lee Kraft from the Juno LIO Tech Teleconferencing Support. We've also had Representative Fansler join us. Thank you. As our first order of business for the year, we'll be introducing a committee substitute to House Bill 199. I know this bill has generated a lot of discussion and interest, and I'm excited to continue the discussion. We've worked quite a bit on this bill over the interim and engaged the administration, industry, municipalities, and other interested stakeholders to address concerns and suggestions. Many of these changes have been incorporated in the new committee substitute and are a result of the meetings with the stakeholders and the administration. I think you will see that the bill has been significantly narrowed in scope compared to the version you saw in committee last year. There will likely be many more changes to the bill. It is the chair's interest to hold multiple hearings and testimony from industry, the administration, salmon advocates, and other interested entities to have the public process shape this legislation. I encourage all stakeholders to engage in this process so that we can achieve a true balance between responsible development and protecting the salmon resource that Alaskans hold dear. I would entertain a motion to bring the CS before the committee. Representative Fansler.
Well, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 199, working draft 30-LS0438/N as a working document.
Hearing no objection, the CS is before us as a working document. At that, I would like to ask my staff and staff to the committee, Matt Greening, to present the CS and explain the changes. In the meantime, online to answer technical questions about the permitting process, it should be noted there are Ron Benkart, Fish and Game Coordinator, Habitat Division, Department of Fish and Game, Andrew Sayers Fay, Director, Division of Water Quality, Department of Environmental Conservation, John Barrett, South Coast Environmental Program Manager from DOT, David Shade, Water Section Chief, Division of Mining, Land, Water, from the Department of Natural Resources. I'm going to ask you if you would kindly refrain from asking policy questions of the administration during this meeting. And we're going to try and limit our questions only to the clarification of the changes. Mr. Greening, please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Matt Greening, staff to Representative Stutes and also staff to the committee. I wanted to start by prefacing it with a few things. There are no fiscal notes in the packet because we are awaiting new fiscal notes. We expect them to be smaller and did not want to include the old fiscal notes in there as the bill has changed so significantly. I wrote the summary of changes kind of atypical from what you would usually see where it's just delete line X, you know, insert here, because there's been five drafts since the committee has last seen this version. Many of the sections were completely reordered. The wording was different each time, basically on, you know, legal was continuing to clean up language. So in some instances, I chose to where the actual definition of an anadromous habitat was changed, I will put, you know, conforming changes were made throughout the bill, so I don't have to cite each instance in which it says river, lake, or stream versus water bodies. I just thought, given the way the bill was reordered, it made sense to write the explanation of changes in kind of a common sense way that people could actually follow. And it's been a while since the committee has heard this bill, so I wanted to start with kind of a brief synopsis. I won't go through the whole sectional, but what the bill actually does. And just for the committee and the public's kind of refresh, basically it creates a rebuttable presumption that certain waters are anadromous and thereby triggering ADF&G's authority to issue fish habitat permits in those areas. It creates a two-tier permitting scheme. There's a minor anadromous habitat permit and a major anadromous habitat permit. And just for the purpose of clarification, one of the things that we've been hearing a lot of is that people tend to focus on the major anadromous permit. About 80% of these permits will be minor, and those can be the commissioner can make a determination that it is a minor permit and issue the permit in the same day. So for those permits, the effect on the process and the speed at which they can issue these permits isn't really affected. There is an opportunity for people to request reconsideration by the commissioner, but essentially he uses the same data he uses in the determination and can deny that. So essentially most of these permits will be minor, and what triggers whether it's minor or major is if it has significant adverse effects. And I will go through that later as we define it in the bill. So a lot of people see the significant adverse effects section, and I just wanted to make that clarification that that's what triggers whether it's a major or minor permit. And by our estimation and from my discussion with, you know, people who are boots on the ground, most of these permits will be minor permits, you know, 70-80% somewhere in there. So that's the gist of what the bill does. It increases enforceable standards. It creates a more public process, which was essentially the gist of what the Board of Fish letter was to the legislature. They saw a lack of enforceable standards. Currently, in Title 16, it just says that the commissioner shall not issue a permit if it does not ensure for the proper protection of fish and game. But nowhere in statute does it actually define what the proper protection of fish and game is. So that's the enforceable standards part. When you see the significant adverse effects section in the bill, the permits and mitigation sections, those are kind of the meat of what the enforceable standards are. And the other part, the public process part, we added for major permits only. I should back up a minute. The minor permit requires a determination by the commissioner to be posted online, and that was also part of the public process. He has to provide in writing the reasons for his determination. If it is a major permit, there is a round of public comment, a 30-day public comment period. And I know that's caused a little bit of consternation among some, but that was what the Board of Fish wanted, and it kind of behooved us when we were drafting the legislation to make sure that that public process was in there, because we believe that the public should have the opportunity when it's determined that there are significant adverse effects on anadromous waters, that the public has the opportunity to weigh in on that. Perhaps there's regional interests that people have. They live nearby, or they want to comment on it. So I just wanted to do a brief refresher of kind of what the bill is and what it isn't. And at that, I would, with the chair's permission, I would go through the, unless anybody has any questions.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the good explanations, Matt. You talked about major and minor permits, and it seems to be I caught that as a major policy change in here of what we're doing in that. Madam Chair, is there a way that we could look at how the regulations are done now, or how many permits it takes for a job? I was trying to envision in my mind what the differences are, and maybe if we could see how the regulations are now or how they would maybe look at these if this was changed for major or minor, so that as legislators we kind of have an idea of what we're going on. And I think that because it seems like a very major piece of this, is it, if we could get something like that.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I can give you kind of a brief synopsis of the types of permits and what types of activities and on what water bodies the different types of permits would be. For a more detailed explanation, I would defer to the people online. But basically, there's ADF&G issues what's called an 841 permit, and that's under the Fishway Act. So the Fishway Act
Madam Chair? Yes.
Madam Chair, if your staff would like to kind of go over this, that information with us later, the committee, I know that you've kind of got a schedule going, and I don't want to interrupt that right now. So, Matt, I'd be glad to work with you that later, and maybe we could present to the committee later on that.
Representative Newman, I appreciate that. I think that if we can get through this with just the changes from the previous bill to this one, and thank you. Thank you for those thoughts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so reaching for the summary of changes, and I would like to note for anybody who printed that out yesterday and brought copies to the committee, there was an error in this, the explanation of changes. I neglected to include something, and it is on, pardon me, it was on page 5. I did not include the deletion of a subsection, and that was on previous section A1 at the very top, underneath subsection 3A, page 5, lines 2 through 23. This subsection was deleted, and it was basically split into two subsections further down for clarification purposes. And I apologize for that. I just noticed it this morning as I was going through it and said it's posted online correctly. The committee has the right documents, and the public has the right documents here in the room. But I just wanted to make sure for anybody who...
Madam Chair, could you say that again?
Oh, could you repeat where the error was made, please?
I apologize. So the committee and everybody in here does have the right version, but the error was made on...
excuse me, on which document are you referring?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. It is for on the summary of changes. I just missed the deletion of one subsection and a little explanation of why that was done.
Representative Fansler.
Thank you. Through the chair, just to make sure, in our manila folder, that's where we have the correct documents.
Correct. Right? Yeah, I just wanted that for anybody who had printed them out earlier.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so if I'm looking at the summary of changes under significant adverse effects, the one that has just A3 and A5, that's wrong. It's the one that has A1, A3, and A5 is the correct one.
Everything in there is correct right now. The error was on A1.
Okay.
The A3 and A5 were always correct. I just noticed that I did not, there was in the previous version J, that subsection was deleted, and I did not note that deletion.
Got it.
Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So starting on page 1, lines 1 through 3, there was a title change, and this was between version J and version N. And this was for several reasons. You know, previously on lines 1 through 2, the title read, you know, an act establishing general fish and wildlife permits and major and minor anadromous permits for certain activities. General fish and wildlife permits has been deleted from the bill in the title. Firstly, this was because we removed the Firstly, it was because the former general fish and wildlife permit has been moved to be a subset of the minor anadromous permit now. And I will explain that later on. But essentially, we didn't quite get the intent of what that permit was when the first round of drafting. But I will cover that in detail later in the explanation. Secondly, the terms other fish and wildlife were removed throughout the bill. I believe it was the chair's intent for this to be an anadromous fish act. And we took comments and opinions from industry, from stakeholders that pointed out that the term wildlife was a little vague, and it was our intent to tone that down to be strictly about anadromous fish. There are two areas in the bill where it was not removed. That was an oversight, and they will be removed in the next version of the draft. And that is on page 14, line 21 of the current version. And again, wildlife. That was other fish, and then wildlife was also not removed from page 14, lines 23 through 24 of the current version. And I will note just briefly that if committee members have questions, please ask them. Otherwise, I'm just going to go through these, and I'll try to go slow enough for people to actually look at the changes and decide whether they have a question or not.
And again, let's try and limit those questions to clarification questions. Thank you.
Okay, and I did cite in this summary of changes all the other instances where other fish and wildlife were removed from the bill. And I did that mostly. I didn't do that for everything for conforming changes, but I felt like this was appropriate for committee members to be able to look at it and decide, you know, what was their opinion on that removal in the context of the sentence it was in. So that takes care of that part of the title. Relating to fishways was added, and there wasn't a change in the bill that resulted in that being added. It's just a housekeeping measure. It was not included in the last title, and it basically has to do with to reflect the repeal of 1605-851, and that was an exception to the Fishway Act. It basically said that so the Fishway Act requires that you notify the commissioner when you place a dam or an obstruction on a river that has fish. And essentially there was an exception in there that said that you could pay the commissioner a lump sum of money and you could start an on-site hatchery or an off-site hatchery. The lump sum of money would go to the Fish and Game Fund. And the intent here was not to allow people to pay money or start a hatchery to block the passage of fish. And one part of it was that the hatchery didn't even have to be on site, but that's kind of neither here nor there. It was just not viewed as appropriate, and so that was deleted. That was also in the last draft, as I said, and the repeal is on both versions of the bill, page 1, lines 8 through 9, and lines 13 through 14. The references did not change from either version of the bill. So finally, on page 1, line 3, the previous title relating to the protection of fish and game habitat was removed and replaced with relating to the protection of anadromous fish and other fish habitat. I will say once the remaining reference to other fish and wildlife, if it's the committee's intent, if that's removed, the title will be altered to remove that last reference to other fish habitat. Moving on.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not today, Madam Chair. If we could get a little further discussion on wildlife. To me, when I look at this bill and the effects on anadromous fish streams and all, that has an effect on everything within that ecosystem where the fish are at. You know, the animals eat there, they die there, they eat the plants botanically. So that all has an effect on where fish are and spawn, and a lot of reasons why some of us think there maybe have a lack of salmon around. But if we could have a further discussion on why that was removed and some of the definitions, I'd appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Certainly. Thank you.
Point well taken, Representative. Moving on to page 2, if there are no more questions, determination of anadromous fish habitat. So subsection 2A on page 2, lines 2 through 4, which was formerly page 2, lines 2 through 6 of version J. The previous version of the bill required the commissioner to specify in regulation water bodies or portions of them that are important anadromous fish habitat, including the waters that are covered under the presumption in subsection C. In the new version, the existing language in 1605-871A was used regarding the types of waters the commissioner must identify. Instead of water bodies or portions of them, it now reads rivers, lakes, and streams. And again, that's consistent with what is already cataloged, and we felt like we didn't need to reinvent the wheel there. The types of water bodies that are already in statute, we pared it down. And before, essentially, the way it was written, seasonal and intermittent water bodies could include a lot of water bodies. So we just chose to pare it down to what was already in statute. Again, conforming changes were made throughout the bill to reflect that, and that was kind of to my reference earlier. I'm not going to point out each instance in which that has been changed from water bodies or portions of them to rivers, lakes, and streams, because that would take up a lot of the committee's time, and it's the same reference over and over again in the bill.
I'm going to take just one moment to recognize Representative Josephson's here with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So additionally, the term important was removed. Currently in the anadromous waters catalog, they use the term important anadromous fish habitat. And in our mind, that created a loophole in which somebody could say, well, this is anadromous fish habitat, but it's not important. So we removed the term important in recognition that it's either specified as anadromous fish habitat or it is not. And that was the will of the chair on that change. So conforming changes were also made throughout the bill to reflect that. Instead of any time you see a reference to anadromous fish habitat, it will not use the term important anymore. So that's moved in every instance. The requirement to
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to, for clarity, that won't then be in conflict with that language being used in the fish catalog, in the stream catalog?
It won't be, because I believe in the process we will be changing the language in there. I'm not 100% sure about that. The drafters did raise an issue that did we also want waters in the catalog? Did we want to revisit the waters in the catalog and determine what's, you know, important and what's not? And that's not our intent. I don't have a definitive answer on that, but I will say that it's not our intent that we revisit everything in the catalog. So I will get you a more clear answer on that after I discuss with the drafter.
On that note, let me just interrupt one more time to mention that our speaker was here and apparently had to step out, but he was here as well. Speaker Edgman. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moving on to subsection 2B on page 2, lines 5 through 13, formerly page 2, lines 7 through 12 in version D. Or J, excuse me. The previous subsection B was deleted, and a new subsection was inserted to clarify when the department should conduct a site-specific determination to resolve whether a river, lake, or stream is anadromous and therefore determine if a permit is required. In addition, it was not clear in the previous draft who makes the request, what type of information is required to support the department's determination, or how the site-specific determination relates to the anadromous waters presumption. And that was just a subsection for the point of clarity to spell out the process in a little more detail. Additionally, the new wording also requires the department's determination to be posted on the state's online public notice system. Subsection, are there any questions on that?
Okay. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, do we know if there's, I think just future lawsuits that can maybe come up out of this, but based on what standards? You know, if the commissioner makes a determination, it should be based on specific standards, or because that way you have nothing to identify by. Could change by commissioners. So if we don't have a basic standard that it's based on, how would we know?
There,
so I don't know if we could.
Excuse me. Through the chair, Representative Newman, there are, it is spelled out in the bill what he would base his determination on, and I can go through that as after we get done with the explanation. I can point it out in the sectional.
Thank you,
but there are standards there for that, and I will make sure to loop back to that here when we get done. So moving on to subsection 2C on page 2, lines 14 through 23, formerly page 2, lines 13 through 15, the anadromous waters presumption was narrowed in comparison to the previous version of the bill. And I basically went over this change already in previous. Essentially, it was narrowed from water bodies to rivers, lakes, and streams. Now, that's what water bodies are included. Now, basically, this is the narrowing part. The current presumption, where it used to apply essentially to all, it was presumed that all water bodies that were permanent or intermittent were anadromous until proven otherwise. And here's the real, one of the main changes we made was it now only applies to rivers, lakes, and streams that are connected to rivers, lakes, and streams that are already in the catalog. And it's kind of a common sense approach to say this is connected to a segment that's already been cataloged as anadromous, and it is kind of common sense that there's probably fish moving through there anyway. And there's a caveat to that. If there is a permanent physical barrier that's insurmountable to the passage of fish, then it's no longer connected. So if, let's say you were to develop a project upstream from a segment that was connected, if you can, basically what that means is a waterfall. If you can show that there's a waterfall that fish can't get up above that segment or above that waterfall, it's no longer anadromous. Below, it is. And I would say this is very similar to the presumption that currently exists in the Forest Resources and Practices Act. Their presumption has a stream gradient requirement to it. It basically says that if the stream gradient is 8% or more, that it's no longer considered anadromous. The problem with this is that there's a significant amount of scientific data in more recent years that shows that fish can get up way past 8%, even upwards of 10 to 12%, and especially coho and Chinook salmon have the ability to really navigate some very steep gradients. So we chose not to go with the gradient requirement there.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this permanent barrier could be both natural or, a man-made permanent barrier?
I thought about that. So it could, but that would also require a permit, and it would require a major one. So it, yes and no. Mm-hmm. I had that thought myself. That's a good point.
Representative Chris Tompkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I might have missed the previous question, so I apologize if I'm bandwagoning on Representative Tarr. My question is, above any permanent barrier in a stream, or let me rephrase this, below a permanent barrier, there's the rebuttable presumption. Above the barrier, it's presumed that there's no, it's not an anadromous water body or river, lake, or stream. Is there still a mechanism if somehow anadromous fish are found above the permanent barrier to catalog that portion of the river, lake, or stream as anadromous?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, in the bill there currently is not. In the process that happens now in permitting, yes. If fish are discovered, if it's pointed out to Fish and Game that, hey, there's anadromous fish here during the course of any sort of permitting project, they have the ability to trigger that determination. But I will say I also gave this some thought, and I think that it's something that perhaps might need to be fine-tuned in the bill. In the current process, it exists. In the bill, it's a little bit of a gray area. And on to, if I might, does that answer your question, Representative?
Yes, thank you. Maybe I can just sort of confirm my understanding. So in a certain sense, with this new change, this actually kind of, in a certain sense, kind of goes backwards from the status quo just above these permanent barriers. Do I understand that correctly?
Correct. Although in the Forest Resources Practices Act, they do have that presumption that exists currently. But it only applies to above that first barrier. The one difference I will say between our presumption, I mean, there's more than one difference, but regarding the barrier, ours says permanent physical barrier. It has been interpreted in the past that without that word, or hasn't been interpreted, there's been an attempt to interpret it that way, that it's very unclear what a physical barrier is. That could be a beaver dam, which may not be something that exists from year to year and may not exactly actually block the passage of fish. But yes, other than what applies to the Forest Resources Practices Act, that presumption does exist, but not for these types of permits right now.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, what about dams? There's municipalities that have dams. There's electrical dams. There's ones that create reservoirs for water for communities. How would this affect that?
I think this goes back a little bit to Representative Tarr's question. Sorry, through the chair, Representative Newman. I think this goes back to Representative Tarr's question that I think it does need to be fine-tuned in the bill exactly what type of a physical barrier we're talking about, because although you would require a permit to put a dam in, it's not our intent that somebody could put a dam in and then say, oh, it's not anadromous now anymore. So I point well taken, and I think that there probably needs to be a distinction in the bill for that, and perhaps it's something that we could consider in the next round.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the effects of the fish that are in that upstream of that dam.
Yes,
thank
yes,
you,
sir.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Okay, so moving on here to page 3. The new version of the presumption also specifies that the bed or the lands beneath anadromous rivers, lakes, and streams are anadromous fish habitat. It did not state that in the previous draft, but clearly the bed of a river is part of the anadromous fish habitat. It's where they lay their eggs. It's what it's the essence of their spawning, essentially. So that was added in there to clarify that. On subsection 2, D on page 2, lines 24 through 26. The new subsection states that the presumption under C of this section that certain rivers, lakes, and streams, the lands beneath, and adjacent riparian areas are anadromous fish habitat is applicable only to AS 1605-871 through 1605-901. And I will say that it was added to clarify that the presumption only applies to fish and habitat permitting law. There was a concern among the fishing community that somehow this would trigger, it would affect the regulatory authority of the Board of Fish to for openings and closures outside of salmon streams. And we have a, I don't have it with me, but I'll be happy to provide it to committee members. We have an opinion from the Department of Law that says this this change eliminates that concern. So there, this bill in no way, shape, or form affects the regulatory authority of the Board of Fish, and it does not affect commercial fishing, subsistence fishing, any other types of fishing. Their opinion was specific to the opening and closures part, but we do have another fix in the bill, and I will explain that later, that also addresses concerns that perhaps somebody would need a permit to fly fish in a river. And this is all kind of technical stuff, but I wanted to make sure that we closed all our loopholes on this, and I will get to that just shortly after this, the other change that makes clear that we're not talking about fishing as an impediment to fish. Subsection 2E, 1, 2, and 3, on page 2, line 28, through page 3, line 3. These are new subsections, and this was just part of the structural change that that legal did as they were kind of drafting things, and they found a better way to word it that made a little more sense. So the first one, it subsection 1 maintains the requirement that all waters identified under A, which is the specification section, will continue to be listed in the anadromous waters catalog. Subsection 2 requires the department to develop regulations for conducting the site-specific review and making a determination under B. And I, just to back up briefly, I did not explain this clearly. I'm just realizing now that in the absence of if something's presumed to be anadromous, and in the absence of a specification in the catalog, somebody has the ability to request a site-specific determination from ADF&G to come and look at it and say this does or it does not have fish, and it is or it is not anadromous. So the presumption is not the final word. There's an opportunity to do a scientific analysis and determine whether it is or is not. So subsection 3 allows ADF&G, and this is a big part. Subsection 3 allows ADF&G to define in regulation the scope of the adjacent riparian areas that are considered anadromous fish habitat under the bill. This is authority that ADF&G doesn't currently have, which from our perspective just seemed a little odd, that they can't specify in regulation or define what what riparian areas are important to streams that are already cataloged. That authority currently resides with DNR. So this would be an overlapping authority so that for matters of expediency, and also the biologists who are dealing with the fish, probably the ones that should be determining this, but also for expediency, they don't have to go to DNR and go through a process to say, hey, can we reserve this riparian area on such stream for the safety of fish. It really makes a direct connection between the biologists and their ability to accomplish, that protection.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On this section, on number 2, I know we don't have fiscal notes today because those are being prepared, but I would like some additional information in the fiscal notes about sort of the expectations of how many site-specific requests might be made. I'm just wondering how they might evaluate that. Thank you.
One moment, just jotting this down. I will get that information, Representative, as soon as we. In fact, I'll call the our people working on the fiscal note and make sure that's something that they pay attention to when they're in drafting this.
Thank you,
Representative Fensler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the chair. So you mentioned that this would essentially create an overlapping authority. I know we're not really talking about policy now, but perhaps could you, when we do talk about policy, bring forth other examples of where there are maybe overlapping authorities so we can see how they work out and, if this creates tension between the two departments, things like that, and see just for our discussion on this at that time.
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, absolutely. I will say that from my discussions with biologists, with DNR and DOT, there are hardly any of these that don't have overlapping authority. But I will get those for you so you guys can look at a specific list. But DOT, DNR, ADF&G, the process of, because they deal with different types of bodies, lands, water, for the expanse of a large project, they work hand in hand and will fill segments of different permits together in conjunction to make the overall project permit. So they already do quite a bit of that, but I would be happy to provide a specific list of what types of permits and what types of activities require the two or the I guess the three departments to work together.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, when we're looking at this, Madam Chair, the Alaska Soil and Water Conservation Districts do a tremendous amount of effort in research, you know, working with our schools, and they monitor waterways and the quality of these waterways and do a lot of work on that. Is there a way that we could maybe include some discussion with those folks, too, because information, good, credible information is going to make this a better project?
I'm sure we could.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Newman.
I will look into that, Representative. Okay, unless there are any further questions, moving on. Subsection 2F, 1 and 2 on page 3, lines 4 through 9. So subsection 1, formerly page 2, lines 16 through 19 of version J, the definition of anadromous habitat has been narrowed to reflect the change in subsection A. And essentially, this is just a repeat of what I said before. Obviously, the definition is kind of what goes into what the presumption is. So unless members have questions about that, I will move on. Moving on to page 4. This was kind of a point of much debate while we were drafting this bill, and this is a new subsection that defines the extent of a river or stream that is anadromous fish habitat. It was the drafter's opinion, and we agreed that basically by just saying rivers, lakes, and streams, it was kind of unclear where anadromous fish habitat would terminate. Not upstream, but downstream. So would it include estuarine areas? Would it include wetlands? Reservoirs, all sorts of stuff like that. So this subsection now states that the river or stream includes the foreshore portion, if any, of the river or stream, excuse me, I said lake before, river or stream above the mean low tide line. And I define what a foreshore means there. So essentially, the definition, this always could use probably another look, but we felt like we kind of hit where our intent was with that. And unless anybody has any questions, I'll move on. Section 1605875, this is the anadromous fish habitat permit, and it is housed on Section 3 on page 3, line 12 through page 5, line 1, formerly page 4, line 1 through page 5, line 9. Sorry for all those lines and pages. Kind of unavoidable. So subsection 3A, on page 3, lines 13 through 16, formerly on page 4, lines 1 through 5, there have been a number of changes to this subsection. There's a new reference on line 14 relating to an exemption to the requirements in subsection A1 and A2 for the new general minor anadromous permit, which allows the issuance of a blanket permit for certain types of activities. And I will say, before I get there, I put this later on, but I reference it a lot. The new general minor anadromous permit is essentially for in rural areas where you might have an ATV stream crossing. It allows the commissioner to, without a permit or an application, to issue a determination on a regional or geographical basis to say that type of activity is allowed under these types of conditions. So he can stipulate what the conditions are under which the river crossing has to happen, the mitigation measures that must be taken. And he can only do so if it will not adversely affect salmon habitat. So, and I'll go through that a little later on, but since I referenced it quite a few times already, I wanted to make people clear what that was. It's only for certain types of activities. And the other reason it's separated is that there are different set of standards regarding the types of activities and the different conditions than there are from the regular minor permit. So they're two separate things, so we chose to not reference it in the same light.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you. And so I just want to clarify, because there's the existing minor permit, but what you're saying is this is a new minor permit that's specific, and because the other one, I believe, is also at the discretion of the commissioner. So it's just that this is sort of a carve-out of a specific minor permit that's new.
It is, yes. It was not in the previous version of the bill. It existed as the general fish and wildlife permit.
Okay.
But the intent originally was to have this really be a minor anadromous general permit. And it this one doesn't, like I said, it's different in the standards, but it's also different in that it doesn't require anybody to apply for a permit. There are no permittees, and it doesn't require an application. It's essentially what would happen, in, I guess in layman's terms, was in a rural area where people want to I always use ATV stream crossing, where they want to do that, somebody would approach the commissioner and say, hey, this is something that these people use out here, and it's important to the region. He can issue a determination that just says, I will issue that on a regional and geographical basis. And he may require that people get written authorization from the department, so somebody would call or email and say, hey, can I, my name's Bob Smith, can I use that ATV stream crossing? And he could do that. So there's... It's a distinction in the standards, but also in the fact that there is no permittee, and it's only I'll go through the standards a little bit later of what determines that, but it's more stringent and requires less damage to fish habitat basically. So there isn't an instance under which they could issue these for, you know, I give you a blanket permit to drill 20 wells in this area. So that's it's a little. It's a nuanced deal, but it's really for in recognition of basically rural areas where people, as a way of life and through necessity, need to have these type of crossings.
Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And you mentioned rural numerous times. Is that also, would that be the same permit that would be given to a municipality or be able to be used in a municipality, let's say like the Kenai Peninsula Borough or the Mat-Su Borough or the Fairbanks North Star Borough?
Through the chair, Representative Chenault, yes. I apologize if I didn't make that clear. I say rural because that's where the concern typically on our end came from. But, yes, it is not region-specific or population-specific. It could be anywhere.
Okay. Madam Chairman, if I yes. could, I hate to go back, but a while ago we were talking about permanent barriers. And if I heard correctly, the Forest Practices Act has a different standard of permit barriers than what we currently are trying to use. Is there any way to try to move all of those statutes for the different standards to make sure that we're dealing with the same issue?
I believe that would kind of be up to the sponsor of whether – I mean, that's more of an intent question, but I think that – I can say that we chose not to go with the gradient because we viewed 8% as insufficient. That would be, I suppose, a discussion between yourself and the sponsor of whether she would be amenable to doing that. I would hate to comment of the chair's intent without speaking to her first.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so moving on. 3A, 1A, B, and 2A and B. Previously under the bill, a person, and this is a big change, so this is something to pay attention to. Previously under the bill, a person would be required to obtain an anadromous fish habitat before, and this was entirely new language, conducting an activity that may use, divert, obstruct, pollute, or otherwise affect a water body or portion of water body that was specified as an important anadromous fish habitat. Instead, the new version of the section mirrors wording in the current law in 1605-871B regarding what types of activities would require a permit. The bill now requires a person to obtain an anadromous fish habitat before constructing a hydraulic project or use, divert, obstruct, pollute, or change the natural flow or bed of a specified river, lake, or stream, or use wheeled tract or excavating equipment or log-dragging equipment in the bed of a river, lake, or stream that's specified as anadromous. This is the exact wording out of that statute that currently exists. And, again, this was in an effort to not reinvent the wheel on what types of activities are required to permit. There wasn't really anything that we heard that said that this – that needed to be updated. It was more about the enforceable standards and the public process. So we went with the current wording, and I will say this is where we addressed another concern about when I mentioned earlier that the Department of Law had raised a concern with us that perhaps the wording in the original one could and it was a stretch, but it could be loosely interpreted that basically otherwise affect could translate into somebody is fly fishing in a river, somebody is all sorts of activities could have been corralled under that. So we chose to address that concern. We took the wording out of current statute. So to make it clear, it's never been interpreted in the last 60 years that use is could be interpreted as commercial fishing, and so that we have no reason to believe that it would now. So we went for that same wording. And I know I'm kind of harping on this point, but I wanted to make it clear to fishermen, to commercial fishermen, to people in our district and all districts that we worked very hard to address that concern, and we have addressed it in this bill. There is no effect on any types of fishing, subsistence, commercial or otherwise, sports fishing, sorry.
Let me take a moment to recognize Representative Ortiz has joined us.
Okay, moving on. Subsection B on page 3, line 30 through page 4, line 7, formerly page 4, line 6 through 14. Previously, this section referenced 1605.883 in relation to the requirements for an application. The new version references 1605.883A on line 31, and again, this goes back to the general permit. Basically, the general permit is housed in B. It does not require an application or a permit and has a separate set of conditions for issuance. So we plugged in A throughout the bill after over and over again for the rest of the bill to make it clear that we're not talking about the general permit. We're talking about the regular minor permit. It wasn't appropriate to include them in the same light because they have two separate sets of conditions for issuance. Moving on, subsection 3, F on page 4, lines 25 through 30. In the previous version of the bill, there was a requirement for a 30-day public comment period, and this is for the commissioner's determination that an activity requires a major fish and anadromous habitat permit. And we removed that. It just seemed that that was cumbersome and unnecessary because we're only talking about the determination. There's still a round of public comment on the issuance itself. Viewed as an unnecessary, from our perspective, a round of public comment. There already was one in there that doesn't exist. And in light of expediency for and recognition of development, we removed that one.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just remind me, if you could, please, this public comment period for the determination would come earlier in the process than this other public comment period. And, I mean, was there any concern about, sort of that difference in time, because the earlier you might find out about concerns, the earlier they might be able to be addressed, or, how was that reconciled?
Representative Tarr, through the chair, you are correct that it would happen earlier. There's still an opportunity to ask for a reconsideration of the determination, okay. Just not a 30-day public comment period. So whenever the commissioner issues a determination, he has the ability, or anybody has the ability, to basically ask for a reconsideration. But the commissioner also, on the same light, has the ability to issue a denial and basically say, in scientifically established data that says, this is why I made that determination, your request for consideration is denied. And that's the last administrative appeal option. At that point, it's got to go to the Supreme Court. So I think there's a perception among some that people would be able to just stall out the process. But once that once that final decision on the reconsideration by the commissioner happens, that's it. Then it goes to the Supreme Court. So there is not an opportunity to continually stall out a project.
Thank you.
Gotcha. Moving on. Subsection 3A on page 5, lines 2 through 23, formerly page 5, lines 10 through 26. Previous subsection A on lines 13 through 14 impair the quantity, or flow of water necessary for a water body to support anadromous fish habitat was deleted. Similar, more refined, and again, this was the error I made earlier, so it's right in this one, but similar, more refined language now appears in A3A and A3B, and essentially those sections were derived out of this section, and I can explain basically why that happened if anybody has any questions. But moving on, previous subsection A3 on page 5, lines 17 through 19, was deleted. And that subsection had defined a significant adverse effect as impairing the quality or flow of a water body that is not anadromous fish habitat, but is necessary to preserve the quality or flow of a water body that is anadromous fish habitat. Now, we had already removed the word indirectly out of the definition, so this seemed consistent with that change, that we're not talking necessarily about indirect effects and more direct effects. Previous subsection A5 on lines 21 through 22 was deleted. The subsection had defined a significant adverse effect as adversely affecting other fish and wildlife that depend on the health and productivity of that anadromous fish habitat. And again, this was consistent with our removal of the terms other fish and wildlife throughout the bill. And it's not to say that that's not important, but I believe it was the chair's intent here for this to be an anadromous fish act. Moving on, subsection A1 on page 5, lines 6 through 7, there is a new subsection that defines a significant adverse effect as interfering with the spawning, rearing, or migration of anadromous fish at any stage in life. And this actually comes out of an old draft regulation, and it speaks more to the biology of the fish than the habitat. We wanted to balance this with not just the habitat itself, but the actual biology of the fish. So moving on to subsection A2 on page 5, lines 8 through 9, formerly on page 15, lines 15 through 16. The previous version of this subsection had defined a significant adverse effect to be impeding or preventing the safe and timely and efficient upstream and downstream passage of fish and anadromous fish. This was narrowed in the current version to impede the safe and efficient upstream and downstream passage of fish. And I will say that this was basically a common sense, shrinking of the language to impede is also to prevent. So it just didn't seem to make sense to have impede and prevent, because in the definition of impede is also prevent. So we chose to make that change. Subsection A3 in the current version, the word significantly was added on line 10 to apply to 3, A, B, and C. So we added significantly to the threshold there for each one of those. Some of those are new subsections. Some of those are not. But we wanted to make it clear that what we're talking about here is not an effect, but a significant effect. So it couldn't be interpreted that something very minor, which would not actually necessarily hamper the ability of fish to migrate, the ability of fish to get to where they're going and to spawn, but this significantly just adds a little bit of a higher threshold. So moving on, subsection A3A. On page 5, lines 11 through 12, this is a new subsection that defines a significant adverse effect as significantly impairing the water quality or water temperature necessary to support anadromous fish. And again, this was something that kind of was a divestiture of some language in the other significant adverse effects section. We just chose to split it. And moving on again, subsection A3B. On page 5, lines 13 through 14, this is a new subsection that defines a significant adverse effect as significantly, again, reducing in-stream flows or altering the natural flow regimes necessary to support anadromous fish and anadromous fish habitat. Subsection A3C on page 5, lines 15 through 17, formerly page 5, line 20. It previously read reduce, and this is, again, in significant adverse effects. And I want to point out one more time, sorry to interrupt, but significant adverse effects does not mean you won't get a permit. It means that it's a major permit versus a minor permit, and that distinction I just feel like needs to be made again, because a lot of people see that and they go, oh my gosh. Reduce aquatic diversity, productivity, stability, or function. That's what it read before. It now reads significantly diminish the overall, and we stuck the word overall in there to kind of make it a more holistic approach. So it really, the effect, again, it raises the threshold a little bit. Aquatic diversity, productivity, stability, or function of all portions of a river, lake, or stream that is anadromous fish habitat, excuse me. Subsection A4 on lines 18 through 19. This is a new subsection that defines a significant adverse effect as creating conditions known to have adverse effects on or caused increased mortality of anadromous fish at any stage. And again, this was also out of an old draft regulation. It was in an effort to make sure that we're also talking about the biology of the fish and not just the habitat itself. There are instances in which the habitat might not be affected, but the fish might be. So that was just in an effort to make sure that we're talking about fish and the fish habitat. Unless there's any questions there. I'm a minor anadromous fish habitat permit. Subsection B through G.
Excuse me. Representative Densler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, just to be clear, when some of these definitions you're saying, this is to kind of align us with previous definitions that have been used. Is this a situation where that's the case, or is this a new definition?
I don't know if the wording is exactly the same, and I believe I misspoke earlier when I said the first instance when I said it was out of a draft regulation, that was incorrect. This one is, and okay. I don't know if the wording is exact. And I don't have the draft regulation with me, but it's one that didn't actually get into regulations. But I can find that wording for you and see if I can give you the exact language. Some of this language was derived with working with a bunch of different people, and at this point I can't tell you if that was the exact wording, but it was a wording that was based on that.
Follow up if I may.
Yeah,
thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, I appreciate when you do point that out in here when it's based on something or so we know the linkage. So thank you for that. If you follow up with that at some point with you know all of us, or an addendum to the memo would be fine or whatever.
Okay, so. Absolutely. I will
thank you.
Write this down real quick so I remember it.
Thank you.
Some of this language was something that there's been so many revisions. I apologize for not having that with me, but I will track it down.
Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And just for clarification on said it may have came from other draft regulations, I would be interested to see where those regulations came from. And, if they weren't put forward in the previous legislation or through previous regulations, then I'd like to know why.
Absolutely. I will try to get that information for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Continue, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, I believe I covered that. So we're on to the minor anadromous fish habitat permit. Subsection B through G on page 6, line 18, through page 8, line 2. Formerly page 12, line 20 through page 3, line 31. These subsections give the commissioner the authority to issue a general, and again we're talking about the general minor anadromous permit, general minor anadromous fish habitat permit for minor activities under certain conditions. Most of this language, in fact almost all of it, existed in the previous draft, but it was under the general fish and wildlife permit. So it's being renamed, as I say, the General Minor Anadromous Fish Habitat Permit. As referenced in the title change, you know, section above, the terms other fish and wildlife were removed, leaving only references to anadromous fish throughout this section. That's one of the language changes that did occur. There were also several changes to the conditions under which a commissioner may issue a General Minor Anadromous Fish Habitat Permit. Section 5B1. On page 6, lines 23 through 24, formerly on page 2, lines 26 through 27, the previous B1 read that The commissioner may issue a permit, essentially a general permit, if the activity singly or in combination with other factors poses little potential to significantly significantly affect fish and wildlife habitat. It currently reads the activity will not cause significant adverse effects on anadromous fish habitat. It's the other factors part seem to imply that we were talking about something outside the activity itself, and we chose to dial that down. It didn't seem necessary to make the distinction of the activity singly in combination because we're talking about a general permit in which it's kind of understood that there's more than one activity occurring. So that really was just a simplification and to try to avoid other factors being determined in there because it didn't seem to have anything to do with the activity itself. Subsection 2 on page 2, line 28 of the previous version, this subsection previously it said that it could only be issued if the activity does not relate to industrial development. That was deleted for several reasons. A, industrial development was a little difficult to define, but B, there may be instances under which the commissioner would want to issue something that did not significantly or adversely affect fish habitat, but somehow was related to industrial development. We didn't see a loophole here because if it's an activity that would significantly adversely affect it, it could not be issued under this. So it was a cleanup, and we wanted to allow the commissioner some discretion in how he would issue these type of blanket permits, again, in the recognition of trying to, not overly hamper development. And moving on to subsection D on page 7, lines 8 through 15, formerly subsection C on page 3, lines 11 through 16. Moving on to page 7, the language on lines 8 through 9 was added to allow the commissioner to issue the regional or geographical authorization for an activity for the permit, the general minor permit, or require a person to obtain written authorization. So that is up to the commissioner's discretion when he issues these blanket permits of whether it's going to be a regional or geographical, or request people under that permit to get written permission from the department. So on subsection G, on page 8, lines 1 through 2, this is a new subsection, and you will see this throughout the bill. It's just an insertion of a definition section to make it clear that the definition of anadromous habitat is consistent throughout the bill from section to section. Moving on to the major anadromous fish habitat permit, subsection B on page 8, lines 23 through 28, formerly on page 7, lines 10 through 11, the previous subsection was deleted and a new one was inserted. It now requires the commissioner or an applicant to collect the needed information for the commissioner to make a determination of whether a proposed activity should be permitted as a major anadromous permit. Additionally, it provides the commissioner, and this is new, at his discretion with the ability to, so it says may, it does not say shall, at his discretion with the ability to recover fees equal to the cost incurred by the department. In collecting the necessary information to make the determination under A. Previously, the section had simply required the applicant to collect the information, so this allows Fish and Game to collect the information, and they may recover the fees. It was less prescriptive and provided more flexibility in how this process would be done. Subsection F.
Oh, excuse me. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Matt, when I'm looking at this at the discretion of the commissioner, we seem to be giving a lot more authority to the commissioner to make the discretionary decision to whether to allow these permits or not. Again, I think I see a need for a structure for doing that. That can change politically, a lot of different reasons. I'd sure like to see something in there that defines that so that whether it's asking other groups or getting other information, or to me that just seems like a whole lot of authority for the commissioner to make them without a structure of why and how the decisions were made.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, so we're, and you're talking about in relation to his discretion to require fees.
Right.
Okay, point well taken.
And Madam Chair, I don't know where that's at, but the discovery process, it is the legislative process. We can work through that one maybe. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Subsection F2A on and B, excuse me, on page 9, line 21 through page 10, line 7. These are new subsection that subsections that clarify how ADF&G will measure whether a project will cause substantial damage. Specifically, it clarifies how the department will assess whether anadromous fish will recover to natural or historic levels after the process or the project is complete. And that, again, is just another kind of layer of definition so we can determine. One of the things that we had received some feedback on from industry to some extent and from others was that there was a lack of definitions in the bill. So we made an attempt to add more definitions of exactly what we were talking about when we were making references. Moving on to permit conditions and mitigation measures, subsection A through E on page 12, line 4 through page 13, line 10, formerly page 10, line 11 through page 13, line 7, and that's the entire section. Again, I just wanted to give members be able to reference both sections. Subsection A3 on page 10, lines 21 through 22 of the previous version. This subsection was deleted. It stated that the commissioner may not permit an activity if it cannot be carried out in a manner that will ensure the proper protection of other fish and wildlife habitat. And again, this is consistent with our intent to remove the terms wildlife and other fish in the bill. Moving on to subsection A on page 12. Lines 14 through 15, formerly on page 10, lines 23 through 24. Previously, the subsection read that an activity cannot be permitted if it would convert a wild fish population to a hatchery-dependent fish population. That language has been altered in the current version to will replace or cement a wild fish population with a hatchery population. And this was really done because there's a difference between convert and replace and supplement. We wanted to make sure that convert is basically replace, but we also didn't want people to be able to say, well, we eliminated half this run, so we're now going to supplement the other half with this hatchery. It's in recognition of just clarifying the definitions of exactly what we were talking about. Subsection A on page...
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, just on that one with wild fish populations and hatchery-dependent populations, there's discussion within the legislature currently of maybe allowing different organizations to work on supplementing fish habitat and allowing them to maybe hatch eggs and do that. Some of that, how would that affect these if they're not a hatchery, or would that still be have to be regulated under the Department of NER? Maybe we should have some discussion on that.
Briefly, I think it's worth discussion, but I will say that this would not affect those efforts because this is only in relation to the permit and the stipulations. The mitigation measures of your permit would be such that you would say to the commissioner, okay, I'm harming this run here, but as a condition of this permit, go ahead and issue me this permit if I supplement this wild run with this hatchery run. So this only applies to if you're trying to permit an anadromous stream, and that's your mitigation measure that you propose to the commissioner, is that you supplement a wild run with a hatchery run. So it wouldn't affect those efforts at all. Did I understand your question correctly, Representative?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think we got there, but that's huge. It sounds
certainly warrants discussion.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you for that question, Representative Too. So I'm trying to remember exactly where I am here. Okay, permit conditions and mitigation measures. Sorry, lost my spot. Subsection A on page 12, lines 14 through 15, formerly page 10, lines 23 through 24. Previously, the subsection that read an activity
cannot... Wait a minute, where are you? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Representative or Madam Chair, at the bottom of page 7, subsection A, the last line there.
Page 7?
Yeah.
I thought we were at the top of page 8.
It's a slightly different version, I think.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
Could I request an at-ease really quick, Madam Chair?
At-ease.
The page there, which was lost my place. Sorry. So, moving on to where the chair was and where the rest of the committee was, where I was not. Subsection A4 on page 12, at the top of page 8. Subsection A, 4 on page 12, lines 16 through 17, formerly page 10, lines 25 through 27. Previously, this subsection read that an activity cannot be permitted if it would dewater or relocate a water body or portion of water body for more than 5 years that the commissioner had specified as important or presumed important to an Adjuman's fish habitat under AS 1605-871A. The current section now reads, will dewater an Adjuman's fish habitat for a period likely to cause permanent or long-lasting, and that was replaced with 5 years because we had feedback from the department that in some instances 5 years is too little, and in some instances 5 years is too much. So, again, it does provide discretion for the biologist to, on a project-specific basis, to determine what that period is and what's appropriate. It basically allows more flexibility, boots on the ground for the biologist. Subsection A5 on page 12, lines 18 through 19, this is a new subsection that specifies that a permit may not be issued for an activity. And I should have said this earlier, but the conditions and mitigation section is the sidebars of when a commissioner may not issue a permit. So everything I'm saying is in the context of if this cannot be met, the permit cannot be issued, which is different from significant adverse effects, which determines whether it's a minor or major permit. So it basically says it may not be issued if the activity will permanently relocate all or portions of a river if the relocation will disrupt the migration or passage of fish. And the reason this was added, it's kind of a split of one of the old sidebars we had in the other bill, but there was a concern from DOT that there are instances in which a river will need to be permanently relocated when you're building a road. And they try to avoid it wherever they can, and I think they do a good job at that, but there are instances in which you will need to permanently relocate a river. And that is why it has the sidebar, if the relocation will disrupt the migration or passage of an Adjuman's fish. So it just specifies that when it's absolutely necessary for them to permanently relocate an Adjuman's river, they do it in a way that does not disrupt the passage of an Adjuman's fish.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt, would you anticipate something like this? So a company wants to start a mine, and there's a stream through it. It's got fish in it, but it goes right through the middle of their mine. So they come up with a plan working with the Department of Fish and Habitat and biologists and interested organizations to relocate that permanently so it goes around that. What was the discussions that happened there as far as this would include like mines or relocation, if they can do that permanently but still show that it wouldn't interrupt it for long term?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, you pretty much hit the nail on the head there. It would be anybody who needed to do that, including mines. So they would. That's exactly how they would do it. They would work with ADF&G. They'd work with the affected agencies, and they would be able to do it in a way to where they could show, yes, we had to relocate this river, but we did it in a way that was responsible in conjunction with the biologists. And as far as this was a concern that I didn't hear directly from DOT, but it was something that I had heard from other people who had talked to DOT. So I will be square with you on that one, that it wasn't a concern I spoke directly to with DOT about, but it was one that I heard from multiple sources, and it seemed reasonable that you would be allowed to do that if you did it in a responsible way. And the one part I didn't mention, too, is the other section in the old bill that contained this said dewater and relocate. So we split that into two sections so that there's a different standard for dewatering a stream versus relocating it. And it really was in that effort. I mentioned DOT, but it was I did have a meeting or two with the Mining Association, and they did not mention that specifically, but this was crafted in a way that was such that mines would be able to utilize it too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the explanation, Matt.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to reconsideration of determinations. Section A on page 13, line 13, formerly page 11, line 20. Person adversely affected was changed to interested person. In the previous draft on page 3, line 6, interested person was actually used in version J in relation to determinations, and the replacement in this section was really to be consistent regarding the reconsideration of determinations. So we didn't want one section to reference interested person and the other one to reference adversely affected. And I spoke to the drafter about this, and he personally did not see a difference in the legal definition between interested person and adversely affected person. I know that sounds odd, but he basically said that anybody can say they're adversely affected. You know, you care about salmon, you're adversely affected by a decision. So from our initial talking to the drafters, there wasn't really much of a difference between those two definitions, and that it was really in an effort to remain consistent. But I'd be happy to have the drafters speak to that if needed. So moving on to Section 6 on page 13, line 27, formerly on page 12, line 4. This is the exemption for emergency situations. And we made an addition on page 13, line 30. We added or state agency. It basically just said before in the bill, riparian owner. And there's instances in which, a state agency would need to make an emergency repair to a riparian area, and that, you know, DOT, for instance. So this was just giving the flexibility when the state is not the riparian owner that they're allowed to make emergency repairs due to flooding. And it just seemed like a common sense change, so the department doesn't have their hands bound in the case of emergencies. So moving on to applicability of permitting requirements, and this quite obviously is a very significant section because this contains our existing facility, activity, or operation or project exemption. And basically what this says, and I'll go through the technical speak and I'll give the layman's terms, the effect of these actions is that an existing facility, activity, operation, or project, and we tried to be very broad here, we did not want to exclude anybody, that has in full force and effect all required state authorizations relating to the protection of anadromous fish and anadromous fish habitat on the effective day of this act would remain under the permitting regime as it existed the day before the effective day of this act, including renewals and minor authorizations in perpetuity, and this is the caveat to perpetuity, until that existing facility, activity, operation, or project significantly expands or increases in scope, area, or frequency, or otherwise takes action outside of those actions which it was authorized on the day before the effective day of this act. So in layman's terms, the intent of this, and I believe we got very close, if not all the way there, and was that those permitted under the current law would stay under the current law, including renewals, in perpetuity, unless they significantly expanded the scope of their permit. So essentially, you want to change your discharge point to an entirely different segment of the river, or you go something way beyond the scope of your original permit as it was in effect the day before the effective day of this act. And this was really to address, to address concerns by municipalities and industry, as well as others, but primarily there was a concern from the municipalities that, and from DEC specifically, that they would not be able to permit mixing zones any longer if the bill passed as was. So we wanted to make sure that we didn't overly burden municipalities during a time where they really, quite frankly, can't afford it. And also for, say, the oil and gas companies, exploration companies, people that have these projects permitted, eventually, people who do go out and do new activities are going to be under this law. But this was a facilities exemption that seemed reasonable and had the least amount of impact on ongoing operations. And that is the extent of my summary of changes. I don't know if anybody has any questions on that portion.
Any questions? Okay. Matt? I'm sorry. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair. I just go back for a moment. We were talking about interested person. So currently it reads an interested person, and I'm trying to figure out, is that different in any way than any person, legally speaking?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, no. It is any person. Anybody can say they have an interest, legally speaking, in a determination in a permit being issued. So you are correct in that analysis.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Madam Chair, I had wrote that down in my notes too, Matt. Is a person?
through the chair, Representative Newman, very good question. I asked that question the day before, and corporations are considered persons to the best of my knowledge. It's a question that I need to 100% be clear on, but it has been that is not our intent. So if there's any possibility that is not the case, that was not our intent. But from the answer I got, it is, to the best of my knowledge, a person will include corporations and companies.
Or maybe a representative of that company, or
yes,
whoever's signing the contract then.
And I will, just because I did ask that question and I did get an answer, but I will triple check that for you, because that is certainly not our intent, that only people have to apply to this.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and excuse me for not going through the chair.
No problem. No problem. Are there any other questions for Matt? Matt, you did a superb job. Thank you. That was an excellent presentation. And I think if we have any questions, we know who to direct them to. You seem to have this under your belt. As previously stated, we're going to make additional meaningful changes to this bill as we walk through it. I'm anticipating that members and stakeholders reach out to my office if you have any ideas, concerns, issues. I believe that we all need to work together on this. It's an update to Title 16. The intent of this legislation is not to diminish the value of any one resource in this state. We all live here together. We all have to work here together. The intent of this legislation is to maintain a sustainable, healthy, renewable resource in our fisheries. That's the crux of this legislation. And so I believe that working with all the stakeholders, we can come out with a good document. And you know what they say when you're in the legislature? If you have a bill that everybody likes a little bit and doesn't like a little bit, you've got a winner. And that's what we intend to do with this. We will be having, as we go through and get more information, we will be having more hearings. Trust me, this is going to be on the front burner, and we'll hear it plenty of times that everybody is comfortable with it and has had an opportunity to get their input and their questions asked. So with that, we will set this bill aside for a hearing at a future date. Our next meeting of the Fisheries Committee will be Thursday, January 25th at 11 a.m., and we will be hearing House Bill 188, Commercial Fishery Entry Permits, Loans, and Trusts in Room 120. And please note, we'll be having our subcommittee hearings at 10. You're certainly welcome to attend those, but the Fisheries Committee meeting for 188 will start at 11. So, seeing no further business. Oh, excuse me, Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Madam Chairman, just for the public and the public's concern, there will be numerous opportunities to have this bill before us, I believe, is what you said. And certainly I think a number of us have questions for the administration and the different departments that are involved. And we would like access to that, and I'm sure we will get it, but I just want to try to get that on the record.
Certainly, that is our intent. And I would also like to thank, I saw Commissioner Cotton here earlier, I see Mr. Rogers here, and everybody that came, as well as the people that we had online, David Shade, Ron Benkert, Andrew Sayers Fay, John Barnett. I appreciate the time that everybody's taken to hear this bill. And with that, we will adjourn the House Special Fisheries Committee at 11:25.